Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com.
I don't know that there's a more rewarding job, lifestyle rewards than farming and ranching in Montana. I don't know that there's a tougher job out there as well. And so how do we say thanks to our farmers? It's pretty simple. You just say thank you. And that's what we're doing here today. We're in the heart of Montana's Golden Triangle. Going to visit farms along the High Line here. Going to share some lunch, some beverages, some great gifts as well with producers who are feeding us. They're feeding our nation. They're going to feed your children and your children's children, right? So today, farm to finish gratitude from all of us here at the Northern Broadcasting System, Northern Ag Network, Northern News Network, and, of course, Voices of Montana. We are live for the farmers today. Man, we love the people. And today, we're out meeting a lot of folks that we love. Let me tell you who's going to come on a bit later on. Well, a lot of folks we're talking to, Perry Johnson and Eddie Scheiber from CHS. Krista Evans will be alongside from Montana Renewables. Jake Srissel, the chair of Hill County Commission. We'll talk about the culture. We'll talk about Hill County and the community. Kyle Leeds, our great friend from New Media Broadcasting, who's been a part of this community. I mean, a solid part of this community for years and years and years. And Kyle's phone probably rings off the hook, and what he says is yes. After that. So, Kyle, we appreciate you so much. Jennifer Patrick, the project manager for the Milk River Joint Board of Control. Jennifer and I have been chatting with each other for the past, well, almost 20 years, ever since somebody said, hey, we got to fix this. And then they didn't for 20-plus years. But now work is being done on the St. Mary's conveyance. And we're going to get things off here. We are at the Northern Ag Research Center, huge facility here in northern Montana from Montana State University. Dr. Darren Boss, who's the superintendent of this place. Nice place, Darren. How you doing?
I'm outstanding. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for being here. We have Dr. Ricardo Pinto, an assistant professor, and we're going to talk some precision ag with you. How are you doing, Ricardo?
Doing great. Thanks for having me today.
Thank you for being here. Darren, tell us about this facility. Tell the audience out there what it is.
Absolutely. So Northern Ag Research Center is one of the 7 research centers located geographically around the state. We're part of the Montana Ag Experiment Station, and each state has a research station. It was part of the land grant institution program back that President Lincoln started with the Morrill Act, which was to build a college in every state to educate rural people, the sons and daughters of rural Montana. They knew that coming out of the Civil War, to educate rural Montana and other states was a way to drive economic profitability. That's the first act. The second act is a Hatch Act. The Hatch Act is the act that lets us do research. So it's formula funding, and that's what I do for the university is I generate all the research enterprises, or I help the research enterprises of that. And the third one, and Colleen Pegar's here from Hill County, is the Smith-Lever Act, which is a part of disseminating that research to the people. So Northern Ag Research Center generates unbiased research that is geographically appropriate for our producers.
What's your bailiwick? What are you guys looking into?
So it's a 7,000-acre facility where we look at beef cattle nutrition management, precision agriculture. We have variety testings. As we know, every producer decides which varieties are growing each year. We just put a new cropping system person on to look at different varieties, rotations, pulses, wheat, lentil, oil seeds. And Dr. Pinto sitting next to me is now bringing in the precision ag component, and we're super excited about it because we had a program in 92, and now we have it back.
Nice. Dr. Pinto, why don't you talk about I want to get into precision ag, but tell us about your background a little bit and tell us why you're here.
No, thank you. That's a great point. So I grew up in Brazil, and I had the opportunity to do part of my PhD at Montana State. So I got in love with Montana and always had Montana on my radar to come back. And then I worked in the private sector for a while, then came to Washington, worked for Washington State University for a little bit. And then when this opportunity opened here, the Northern Ag Research Center was So easy to say yes, and I'm glad to be here and working together with the producers here in the area.
I'm going to talk about your precision agricultural field here in a little bit. Set him up for that. Why is the Northern Ag Research Center getting into precision agriculture? I don't know if you have any choice, do you?
Well, no. I mean, technology is going to be the next driving factor in some way, shape, or form. We're not going to have the Norman Borlaug, you know, event happen in dwarf wheat or production ag. It's going to be technology in some shape or form, whether it's sensors, whether it's equipment, whether it's precision feeding cattle the right protein in 2 weeks of the year to generate epigenetic components on the daughters that are in utero that are going to be more efficient on rangeland. So precision.
You're talking like a doctor now.
I know. Yeah. I know. We're thinking, you know, we used to farm acres. We're farming inches.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how we got to think about that is we're gone from acres to inches.
What does that do?
No, that's exactly the point that Darren set the stage is what we are planning to do when we think about precision ag. Many people think about technology, but mainly what we want to do is apply our agronomic knowledge considering the natural, spatial, and temporal variability that we have in our agriculture fields. And this can be different. Each farmer's montana is different.
Yeah.
For one person, we perhaps have soil acidification as a major driver. For the other one, is weed management. So what we want to do as a program is to make sure that we validate those technology that we have out there for producers, and we can apply the amount of input only where and when is necessary, and the amount that's necessary. With the time market that we have out there, it's really important to be more precise in our operation.
Give me an example of that with whatever crop you guys are working. Corn, I see a nice cornfield out here, whether it's lentils, canola. Give me an example of how precision agriculture is employed on the ground.
Excellent. So one really good example of an area that we are working really intensively here in the station is spot spray technology, so precise herbicide management tools.
Okay.
So when you think about herbicide management, it's each year is becoming more difficult to fight against those weeds that we have in the area. And with the tight price market, it's really important to be precise. So what those technologies do, they spray only where we have the weeds. So in our field trials here in the station, we are seeing savings of 80% less chemical products that we are putting in the ground. So if you think about reducing your spray bill in 80%, it can be massive when you escalate that for multiple acres that we have in Montana. But to do this next step, we need to make an investment, right? So what we are working really close with producers is how this technology fits my operation. If I get one of these equipment, how long is going to be my payback period? So we are working really intensely with them to combine this technology with the economics, because it's really important. Economics is the major driver that we are looking into.
Darren, add into that.
No, this is something we just hired for, a target hire of Precision Agricultures, and I think they'll get tired of hearing me saying the mantra. It's got to be economically relevant to our producers. We can't deploy stuff that's just cost money, right? We're talking at depressed wheat markets now. We're up in beef, but every one of the machinery costs are going up with inflation and everything else. Relevant is our mantra, and I think that's where Ricardo is saying it. It's important that we always put a pencil to it.
AI probably plays a part in this, and understanding AI, I think we're behind what we can do in terms of our understanding of it. How does the average producer use it in a efficient and sensible and understandable application?
Well, it's awesome. We get great genetics in beef cattle with AI.
Yeah.
Really? Oh, you're talking about artificial insemination or artificial intelligence.
Different thing.
Oh, maybe, Ricardo, maybe, that's your field.
Ricardo should handle
I'm
this
the beef
one.
Guy. You better jump in
okay,
on this
Okay, I jump
one.
On that.
Yeah.
No, that's excellent. When you think about AI, it brings a lot of possibilities for us. And Darren's making the joke because when we start the meeting here, I'm not in the cattle world. I'm crop guy.
Uh-huh.
And that's all then talk about AI. Oh, that's great. I need to learn more about AI in animals. So I got it really quick. But when you think about AI, you know, it brings us a lot of possibilities. So now, coming back to the herbicide management, we have camera systems that can in real time detect what's a crop and what's a weed and spray just the weeds. And this is doing in real time. If you think about 10, maybe 5 years ago, this would be impossible with the computer processing that we have. But now, those technologies are becoming viable. So this is an example, but we have others. When you think about data that we are collecting, each operation that we do in the field, we are collecting data. So we are collecting your yield maps, we are collecting weather data, we are collecting soil properties. How we merge all this information together? I don't want to have 5 or 10 tabs in my computer open to make a decision. Yeah. So this we can use AI to look in all those directions and help us to understand, okay, the problem that we have in this specific area is related to soil properties. So focus on that. But in other areas, different. And this optimize time, optimize computer processing, and optimize our decision to make sure that we are being more precise.
Darren, how do we get the industry on board, the producers, the commercial element behind it, and education? How do we get them all on board?
Well, actually, it's a wonderful merging of what we do because we generate unbiased research, right? So we partners with the Torgersons in the room, the bankers in the room, and the industry. They come to us and say, hey, how do we integrate this? How do we make it happen? How do we get on the board together, right? To give you an example, we're talking about artificial intelligence. We're merging all these technologies. We're working with a fenceless grazing program right now where we're not just looking at fenceless grazing. We're looking at using satellite data to manage and see how the cattle are grazing, where they're grazing, forage use. And so we can actually integrate satellite, where they're grazing, the cattle, and change geofence for us because of AI, right? And we can move these cattle through the fields, whether it be cows and calves, maybe the calves get some better forages than the cows, but that's how we're trying to merge all this. We can't do what we do in industry without the technical partners out there and getting our industry people together. So,
anything to add, Ricardo?
No, I would say it's a win-to-win situation, right?
Yeah.
So when the company has us testing this technology, it's really good for them because, it's unbiased research, as Darren mentioned, so we are giving our opinion and feedback to improve their product as well. So I think it's a win-to-win situation. It helped us to make sure that we deliver good information and new opportunities for producers. And for the companies as well, it's our feedback on the ground when we are doing that work.
Darren, are people allowed to come in? You guys have tours of this place. Right. How does that work?
So every year, each research center has a field day. And so, like, for instance, we have anywhere between 300 and 400 farmers at our field day at Northern Ag Research Center, usually give or take 2 weeks before the 4th of July or after. And it's great to see all of our bankers and people in here. Years we used to have it during the day. Then we moved it at night. And I asked the producers, I said, why aren't the bankers, why aren't our industry people, why aren't our equipment dealers here? And they said, Darren, when you bring 400 farmers to Havre, Montana, to Northern Ag Research Center, that's the busiest day of the year in FSA and parts. They're not coming to town without getting parts, right? So we moved it to the nighttime where they get their parts before the field day, and it's expanded greatly. So those are all research centers. We welcome them. They can pick up the phone and call us and say, hey, Darren, I kind of want to see the cornfield. I want to see your precision ag pivots anytime.
You know what? I get this field is popping around here. You know, you guys are interested. You're excited about the things you're doing. And I just so much appreciate that because good work, leads to good results in that regard. So Dr. Ricardo Pinto, thank you so much. Appreciate you being here and coming on today. And Dr. Darren Boss, thank you as well. It's pretty good stuff. Darren's the superintendent of the Northern Ag Research Center. And like I say, good, it's popping.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The passion is palpable.
It is, yeah. Thank you so much. All right, how about a hand for these two, okay, you guys? Nice job. All right, Andy Schwab's going to do a little transition here because Krista Evans is going to join us here. Krista, are you coming up?
Yeah, Krista,
we got to drag her up here almost.
I think so.
Yeah. Hi, Krista. Is this a surprise to you, is it?
No, not
quite.
Well, it's kind of funny. We're at the Northern Ag Research Center, Northern Agricultural Research Center, because Andy Schwab with Northern Ag Network, we're kind of having some turf wars here with Darren Boss, but we'll let them have the Northern Ag Research Center, and we'll be Northern Ag today. But we appreciate all them hosting, and we appreciate all the sponsors of this for the Farmers Tour, and one of those, Montana Renewables, as mentioned, Krista Lee Evans with us. And Krista, give us just kind of that 30,000-foot view. I know quite a few folks do know what Montana Renewables is, but we're live statewide right now. Tell us, everybody, what Montana Renewables is.
So Montana Renewables is a renewable fuels refiner based in Great Falls, Montana. We use a variety of feedstocks that are agricultural-based, anywhere from canola, camelina, beef tallow, distillers corn oil. So we're really excited. We're the largest sustainable aviation fuel producer in North America, right here in Great Falls, Montana. So the excitement is for Montana agriculture that you not only have a food market, but you have a very real and realistic fuel market for your crops now in Montana.
Absolutely important. But, I mean, Montana is, you know, agriculture is Montana's number one industry, but getting past agriculture, getting past, you know, the finished product, why is it important that Montana is playing this key role?
So renewable fuels is a really interesting dynamic in American agriculture. If you think about ethanol and the role that it played in the fuels world, now with renewable diesel and sustainable aviation fuel, there's an opportunity for the crops that we grow in Montana, like canola and beef tallow, to also play that role in ensuring energy independence for our nation. So it's a huge opportunity for Montana producers. What we really need is a local crush plant. So if anybody has some cash laying around, we'd love that. But yeah, it's a huge opportunity, and we're really excited to be a part of Montana agriculture.
Well, in wrapping up here, as we talk to the farmers on Northern Ag Network every day, talk about the need for growing some of these feedstocks. I mean, Camelina, you mentioned some of them. What's the need there?
So we can use a variety of feedstocks, but if we were to use only canola today, and this is without our planned expansion, we would use all of the oil from about 1.5 million acres. That's our current demand if we used only canola oil. So the opportunity is there. It's huge for Montana agriculture, and we're excited to be a part of it.
Well, Chris Lee Evans, appreciate you sponsoring this for the Farmers Tour and everything that you do with Montana Renewables.
All right, Andy Schwab, good job. Appreciate that. Krista, again, thank you. Krista Evans from Montana Renewables. All right, we are again live at here at the Northern Ag Research Center. Tom Schultz back with Voices of Montana. Just a few notes about our day today. As I mentioned, we will be traveling around and visiting some of these farms, the Greg Wire Farm, the McCormick's Farm, Todd Hansen's Farm. At 5 o'clock, all right, note at 5 p.m., that's quitting time. Well, except for farmers in the summer. We're going to do a highway bar social at 5 o'clock. You're all invited to that. All right. It's a fun day for the farmers. Okay, Jen Patrick is with us, and Jen is the, well, I don't know, I think you're kind of a superhero, Jen. How are you doing, man?
Good. How are you, Tom?
Doing good. Let me make sure I got your the right one up here. Right. Can you hear now?
Yep.
Okay, good. I've chatted with Jen for years and years because this St. Mary's conveyance has been problematic for a lot of years. And as we covered it, you'll get politicians coming in saying, oh, yeah, got to fix this. But for 20 years, nothing really happened.
Yeah, it was kind of a revolving door for 20 years. So
tell us then, what was it that and there's a lot to cover here, all right?
Sure.
For people who don't know, and they should because we've been talking about it for years, what is the St. Mary's conveyance?
So the St. Mary's conveyance system starts up in Glacier National Park, goes through the Blackfeet Reservation, goes across into Milk River, Canada, before it drops back into Fresno Reservoir, which is our largest holding facility on the Milk River stem. But it is out of 6 out of 10 years feeds the entire Milk River system, like we experience this year. So
that's and it's like 110,000 irrigated acres in this area.
Yeah, there's about 120,000 irrigated acres from Fresno to Glasgow area that we service from the Milk River.
And when without this project, it's been said that 7 out of 10 years the Milk River would run dry.
Yeah.
How?
Yeah.
I mean, that seems to be rather kind of, you know, big to me.
Yeah, and this was a perfect example. This year it was all fed by municipal water. It's completely empty until this last couple weeks of storms, but yeah, it's 100% fed this year by diversions.
What has it been like over the years patching this thing up? We may be repeating ourselves, but for the longest time, it was the irrigators that footed the bill, 75% of it, and then the Fed picked up 25%. That's still the case. And so all that patchwork has come out of the pockets of producers in this area.
Correct, yeah. At 75%, like you said, is all producers, stakeholder, municipalities, and the irrigators. And so on a federal project, so let's take the diversion dam, for example. One of the large projects that we have going up there is $100 million. That's $75 million if federal funding didn't come into play. So they're big tickets, and you're talking 110,000, 120,000 acres that are sharing that big ticket. It's just not feasible with commodity prices and cattle and everything like that you guys are talking about today.
So, yeah. Our delegation's been trying to get that reversed 25-75, and I think that makes a lot more sense because this is so vital. I mean, you talk about municipal water, you talk about recreation and irrigation. It starts in Babb.
Yep.
Yeah, and this is where the project reconfiguration started to talk about that.
Yeah, so in 2020, we had a drop failure. We've been saying it for 20, 30 years that it's going to fail. But in 2020, we had the drop failure, 22 weeks. We got it back up and going. We moved on to the siphons because we knew they were going to be the next critical piece. Well, before we could get engineering done on the siphons, they blew out this 2024 in June. And so we've been working really hard. St. Mary's siphon was the failure siphon. We just 30 days ago came back online. And so, you know, it's brought a lot of recognition also to the project. We've been saying this is going to happen. And until it happened, no one realized it. And so we, you know, federal government's very good at pushing the maintenance down the road. I think we have $300 million still sitting there on the table of maintenance that has to happen on the Milk River project.
$300 million. Small and price tag.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we have 29 miles of canal that's 110 years old that, you know, that we have to get up and do something with. So,
what has been the big challenge? Again, putting aside the challenge of getting people to recognize the issue needed, what has been the biggest challenge in getting it reconfigured?
Oh, gosh. Well, number one, we're in Babb, Montana. Population, what, 50 people? And I mean, they're great people, but so that has been tough because it's not the center of, you know, if this was happening in Haver, people see it. Mm. No one sees it up there unless you go to Glacier Park and you're not taking a detour 25 miles down a gravel road to go and see this. And so, you know, location, number one, is probably the hardest. And when you say Babb, Montana, no one knows where that's at. You're back in D.C. That's a tough one, too, so.
Yeah. What else did you? I think one thing we've talked about is the collaboration that happened here, and it may be new avenues of collaboration when you work with the tribe and the federal government and the state government and the local milk control board. Talk about moving forward with that. Has that taught us?
Yeah, you know, number one is it's a federally owned project, so Bureau of Reclamation. Right away, the irrigation districts took transfer. We can do stuff a lot easier than the federal government within a local government. And so we took transfer of it, and so we're able to make those partnerships and pave those roads and bring in an engineering firm that isn't already overloaded like our engineering firm. In the federal government. So, you know, the state of Montana, the Blackfeet tribe, you have to make those partnerships, but also communicate with them. You know, just we've been very adamant that our Facebook page needs to be very full of the projects because I think the transparency, because you get all of these different groups and everyone else has a different boss. I have 12 bosses, you know, and so you have to keep everyone in the loop on it. And so I think the partnership and communication has been what we've learned, and that we can also do things a lot faster than the federal government. So that's been good.
Does that go forward?
Yeah, I think, you know what, we're actually the poster child for aging infrastructure. We've been for quite a while, but now we're the poster child of how you can do a project within budget and moving forward in the speed that we have with construction companies that are vetted and excellent construction companies.
So. I want to shout out some of those names, okay,
sure.
Because I think that's worth it. Milk River Joint Board of Control Project Manager Jennifer Patrick with us here today. And we're For the Farmers live from Haver, Montana at the Northern Ag Research Center. We'll be out there. Todd Hansen, we're coming your way. Tyler, Melissa Caparu, Melissa's here. We're coming your way as well. Real Trouble, that's a bit later on. We invite you all to, again, to the Highway Bar Social at 5 o'clock. Give a shout out to some of those people who are, you know, working like you are, dedicated to do this, and you've kind of spent maybe a few sleepless nights at it.
Yeah, one or two. You know, first Bureau of Reclamation, they kind of handed this to us, and we've had a really good partnership with them. Our area office is great. The politics don't happen there. Then our engineering firm, HDR Engineering, Slutton Construction came in and did our bridge and the structures. NW Construction is actually on that project. They're on the Diversion Dam project and they're on Fresno. So they're a large civil company that's kind of come up in the last couple years. And we've got them on all of our projects. So that is big. And then in the Blackfeet tribe, we have 70 plus tribal workers on site, on agencies, everything like that. So they've been great to work with. And then just the, you know, the state and the partnerships like NRCS, FSA, all of those have been really good too. And then my board for, you know, big shout out to them for letting me run with this. So it's been fun.
There's a lot to thank. Is there any circumstance where somebody really came to your aid that comes to mind, where somebody, you had to make a call and they said, Jen, I'm going to be on this for you?
Oh, all the time. You know, the congressional delegation, both state and federal, and both Democrat and Republicans, you call them and they're there at the table. They're there. How can we help? What can we do? And so that is a big one that we've been really lucky that they pick up the phone still. So, yeah, I would say.
Let's talk about some of the costs here, all right, and how they're being spread out and where it's coming from. Some of it was from the state of Montana. Most recently, I think that was a loan package. You got a Senator Tester did get through a pretty good – that was almost what really kickstarted the majority of the design.
First bill funding kicked off. Senator Tester was successful in putting the diversion dam, which is the start of the project, the $100 million, that got put in there. And then he was successful in, right before he left, sticking some of the funding in the CR. And then the other funding came in Bureau of Reclamations. And so he was pretty successful in that. Senator Sheehy and Senator Daines have both jumped on the Senate side of putting money in different pots, the Fort Belknap Compact. They're working to move that through because that has about $270 million in $75 million in canal restoration for the St. Mary's Canal. And so they've been really good. But, you know, one thing I should probably jump back to is thanking the state of Montana, because as we were in this federal shutdown that none of us could control, the state of Montana came to our aid and said, here is the loan, take it, keep going. So we didn't get cut off for 2 months. So that was a big deal as well, not stopping production for 2 months. And so we just kept going.
You got water running down the canal now this year for the first time. Well, in a while, right? Yeah. A little while. What was that like? It was fun. You guys did really good Facebook stuff on that. It was just kind of fun to watch that water trickle down and then pick up.
It was kind of fun for all of us. Yeah. You know, a lot of the workers, a lot of the crews were up there, and we kind of followed the water down. It was slower this year. You know, usually it's 10-day transfer. It was about 12, 13 days. So it was interesting to see. We've never actually gone the entire way to see when things get there. So it was cool.
Did it test our system?
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest thing is being down for an entire year. You've got that expansion, contraction, the heat, and we are seeing problems that we've never had in the canal and the system right now. So that's tough.
Where are you working at right now?
We're moving to Halls Cooley right now. So we've moved over. It's about half the size. Structures are all the same. It'll be through winter construction, but we're hoping to be back up and going in April without any structure problems.
So. And I know it's a maintenance project that starts, you know, and never finishes, so to speak. Okay. But when are you going to say, I'm moving on to, I'm going to go water my garden?
Well, I have fake lawn, so I don't water anything.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's a good plan.
We have 29 miles of canal, and then when we're done there, we're going to move to Fresno, and we're looking at some drought management in Fresno, and how do we move forward on we silt in about 500 acre feet a year in Fresno. How do we get that back? Is it a bladder? Do we need to go in and take all the silt out of it with a different method? And so, you know, we're not done. And then it goes all the way down to Vandalia Dam. So we'll keep going. Retirement, I'll be gone. Someone else will take it, and we keep going. So.
But you have a lot of super relief producers around here that the work's getting done. Thank you for it.
They had a very, very tough year.
Yeah.
Two very tough years. And so we're thankful how resilient and great they are.
Montana egg country. I love the values that it produces. And I love what the producers are producing in Montana. Number 3 in wheat production. Second in the nation for total agricultural land. 58 million acres. First in pulse crop production. And they do that amongst difficult conditions at times. Montana 2024, over 60% of the state experienced moderate to severe drought. I don't think there's any producer in Montana who hasn't gone through a tough year or two. Welcome back to From Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana. Hey, we're live right here at Northern Ag Research Center. Yeah. Very good good crowd here today, and good to talk with people from all over who share their experiences and their stories about really the backbone of our culture, and that's agriculture. We're moving on here. Kyle Leeds is the I'm just calling you manager, but he wears all the hats at New Media Broadcasting. I mean, he's a sportscaster. And you do PA for the school, and he's an umpire, and then he's a salesman, and then he's a tech guy. And sometimes he probably thinks he's a punching bag too. How you doing, Kyle?
Morning, Tom.
How are you? Doing well?
I'm doing all right this morning.
Yeah. How are things in Havre?
Busy.
Yeah.
This weather's been great.
Good to hear.
Yeah.
Jake Strissel is also with us, chair of the Hill County Commission. Good morning, Jake.
Morning, Tom. How are you?
Good, sir. Last I chatted with you, you were dropping some grain off, I think it was.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Helping out a friend of ours. I'm a fifth-generation farmer. We homesteaded in the Red Yard area in 1910, and we still have our land, but we're leasing it out this year, so I want to stay a part of agriculture, so helping out a buddy this harvest season, and things are going well.
Who are these people you serve? What is Hill County like?
Oh, Hill County is amazing. Our producers are the backbone of our economy. They're the backbone of our county. Bovine, anything. We're really blessed to have all of our producers, and I want to represent them well. I live out in Red Yard, a heart of farm country in Hill County, so I just want to represent our people well, and proud to be here.
That's nice. Kyle, I'm going to ask you the same question. Tell us how long you've been here, how long New Media Broadcasters has been here, and who are the people you serve?
So I've been in the area since, I was born and raised in Havre, so I'm a Havre native, and so I've been here 50 years. But the company's been around since 1947, at least with KO Jam started, and then KPQX came on board in 1975, and KRYK came aboard in 1997. And who we serve, same groups. I mean, we serve this county and the ag producers. I mean, ag's our number one employer still in Hill County. So we serve these folks, we serve the business owners, we serve the regular, people in other professions. You know, that's why we're serving them with the local news, local weather, local sports, local ag information we do, and the partnership we have with the Northern Broadcasting System, too.
Talk about how that might have changed over the years. You have Burlington Northern's a big industry. Of course, ag's the big industry as well. You've got University of Montana Northern here. Oh, pardon, I said that wrong, didn't I? Whoops.
Other way around.
Montana State University Northern here. Thank you. Yeah. Talk about managing that over all those years. What's changed in this community?
I think what's changed is just we're growing. With being a sector headquarters for the Border Patrol, we keep growing because Border Patrol keeps hiring new agents to come in, and they're stationed in Havre. And I mean, that region goes all the way over to almost to Spokane because they just put a regional headquarters in Spokane. So you're looking all the way Montana, Idaho, and then they're going over into North Dakota is what this sector covers for the Border Patrol. So, they've got a lot of agents in here, and they're up and down the High Line. It's not just in Havre.
Commissioner, same question. What have you seen over the years that impresses you or just leaves an impression with you?
One thing that I'm kind of sad about is, our little small towns out west of Havre. At one time, we did have a school for each town, and then we had to consolidate, and then we had to consolidate again, which means that the people are moving away. But what I'm happy to see is that the production is still going. We're not, most of the farm ground now is still in production. It's not in CRP. So that is one good thing that we are carrying on those traditions of agriculture in our communities. So
talk about the community itself. If somebody says, what should I do in Havre? What do you tell them?
Anything. We really do have our hidden gem, our Bear Paw Mountains out there that a lot of people don't know about. But, one thing that I've really noticed about Hill County is that we are a service industry. Our tourism's great. Our railroad is the backbone of our it's Hill County after James J. Hill. So, being able to move that grain, move our product and everything, keeping the railroad going. We're a service-oriented people here in Hill County, and, we want to definitely welcome outsiders and, just do the best we can to be good stewards of the land.
Kyle, what challenges do the people of Hill County overcome?
Challenges that put in front of Hill County just overcomes it. Whatever it's put in front of somebody, they overcome it. I mean, the other thing that's great about Hill County too, the whole High Line actually, is that we'll give our shirts off our backs for our neighbors. there was a benefit a couple of weeks ago, which I think probably quite a few people in this room went to, down in Chinook, where they for a cancer benefit, and they had their whole community building full, plus they had as many people, if not more, outside the community building at this community event, and they raised quite a bit of money for this gentleman that's been fighting cancer, and that's just Northern. If we have a fund, I mean, that's the High Line and that's the Havre area. If there's somebody that needs help, we step up and help them.
You know, if I may piggyback off that, you know, one of the reasons I ran for commissioner, when I was in third grade, my grandfather lost his arms in a hay baling accident.
Oh, wow.
And it was right in the middle of harvest, and I remember as a young kid coming back from Salt Lake City after the amputation, and all of our fields were cut. There was a line of grain trucks from the elevator into Rudyard, and everything was done for us. People took the time out of their day to cut their own crops to come to ours. And that's what, you know, reasons like that really encouraged me to give back to the community. That's one of the reasons I ran for commissioner. So,
well, thank you for that. I mean, public service is, you got to have a public servant's heart, you know,
yep.
In a community like this to get along, because the High Line is not an easy place to live,
right.
I would say. I got a couple of texts here I'll share. Research centers across Montana do so many unique projects. This is a question I think we answered. How many Montanans learn about those, or how can Montanans learn about those and see those projects in person? As Darren had said, Darren Boss, who's superintendent here, we have field days, and so contact them. And then here's another one. You guys probably like this out here. Tell those High Line folks to hang tough. The prices will hopefully come back to where they can be profitable again. What's he talking about?
Prices are just down right now, and, you know, everything is going up in price, fuel to machinery to everything. You know, we're resilient people, though. We'll overcome this.
Kyle, you add to that as well. I mean,
no, I would totally agree. It's we've been through this before, and we'll get through it, and we'll go through it, and it'll turn back around, and they'll get through it again. So, yeah, that's just what we do. Jake said it right. I mean, Hill County people and Northstrom, Montana people are just resilient.
What did I hear? I hear that we're not afraid of an invasion from Canada because, you know, they're not going to get past the High Line people.
We know how to use hockey sticks, too.
That does make us feel better. And we're going to be visiting some farms a bit later on. Ryan McCormick's farm, Todd Hansen, the Satarivas, Melissa Caparuta. I said hello to her. She will be visiting out there a bit later on, too. So that is still upcoming here for our For the Farmers tour. I want to thank you. Thank you, guys. Jake, it's good to meet you, and I appreciate what you do here. And Kyle, we can't thank you enough. And I don't think I could really live 10 minutes in your shoes, dude. So keep up the good work. We're not going to try to understand how you do it, man. Just keep doing it.
Thank you.
He's shaking his head. I don't think he knows how he does it either. All right. Thank you, guys. I appreciate that. I'm going to hand it over. We're going to talk a little bit here about moisture for harvest and how that's, you know, we need moisture, but it's not always a good thing. Perry Johnson and Eddie Scheiber from CHS and Colton Young from our Northern Ag Network has got that. Good morning, you guys.
For having us here, and if anything goes south, it's your fault for giving me a microphone, so we'll just keep that in mind. But like you said,
I'm on alert.
Well, that's good. We're here with CHS Big Sky and Perry Johnson, and Perry, you're a sales rep for CHS. Talk to us a little bit about your position here with CHS.
Absolutely. CHS covers a rather large footprint in Montana, all the way in the Golden Triangle to the other side of the mountains in Kalispell, north and south, to the Missoula, Kalispell, even down further south to Drummond, so there's a big footprint over there, all the way to eastern Montana. And so we cover all of the grain corridors, and we have a similar story to share with an excess of moisture during an inconvenient time. However, it is setting us up for a broader fall input. I think it'll be a good planting season this fall.
Yeah, it's tough to talk about moisture up here in Hill County, because if you're complaining about rain, I feel like I'm going to get frowned upon by a lot of people. But unfortunately, that's the story for this year, and we're going to talk a little more about that with Eddie here in a second. As these producers, we're not seeing a lot of combines out in the field right now. The moisture is too much, and they're kind of putting on a stop. As far as CHS Big Sky, you work from the field to the delivery, the railroad, all the way through the whole process. What are you guys seeing as far as the delivery and grain aspect this year?
Yeah, you know, the delivery from the farm gate has been the big challenge right now, and it's not a surprise to anyone. As we wake up in the morning, we see a lot of dew on our windows, so even if we haven't had the tremendous rain showers we've been seeing overnight, that still carries through to the next day and several days after. So getting out of the bin or even off the field has been the biggest challenge, which is kind of a backward story to what we're normally facing when we have a glut of grain at the elevator trying to get it on the railway out to the ports and the coast. And we usually fight for space with some corn and other things the later it goes. So as we get pushed back with a record corn crop supposedly coming on, we will see. It could be very challenging for all of us.
Yeah, could be a lot of challenges. Like you mentioned, they're talking a record high corn yield and corn crop for this year. Eddie, we'll head over to you. Eddie Scheiber, the grain buyer for CHS, and you're going to be the guy that's in the field seeing a lot of these issues. Like we had talked about, rain is a problem now. And what are you seeing from some of these producers out in the field?
Just having a tough time getting it off the field, given all the moisture and the muddy conditions. And then especially in the wheat heads with the moisture, that they can't cut it when it's that high of moisture, so we got to wait for that to dry down. And when we get a rain shower every 3 days or the dew in the morning, that gives it a tough time to get it off. So,
yeah, it's a real tough time, but in times like this, it's important for the producers to know that they have partnerships with people like CHS Big Sign, with those corporations and companies. What does that partnership mean to you? I mean, you're out there all the time with these producers talking about these issues, trying to find a solution. What does that mean to you?
Oh, it means a lot. I really care about the customers out there and trying to get them the best, get their product in town and get them the best profit they can so they can stay in business, because they are our business. And so if we don't have them, then it kind of all falls apart. So trying to do whatever we can to help them out.
Yep, doing whatever you can, keeping everything rolling. So Perry, let's go back to you. What is to come with CHS Big Sky? Like you had mentioned, a big company, and you play the entire state of Montana in the agriculture game. What's to come for this next year?
Well, hopefully we see some input prices start to soften as we delay purchasing from the farm gate all the way through us to our suppliers. It could create some issues in the channel, so it'll depend on what some of the export and import markets do. You know, when we look at the Big Sky footprint and even over into the Kalispell region, you know, the getting the crops off obviously is the first challenge, but then we have a whole nother thing coming on with cash flow. So talking with Eddie, he's doing the best he can to market things. We've made some pricing a little more favorable, even though the futures market's depressed, so it's not the best one to sell into. But there are other choices out there for customers to take advantage of. So you can separate out your marketing, how you sell your grain, into several different stages, so you don't have to sell it all at once as a cash price that may not be favorable at this point in time.
It's so good to hear you guys come up here and talk about the partnership, and you're doing everything you can to help the producers. And like a lot of the folks on here on the show today with Tom, it's the Hill County folks, the Highland people, they're going to find a way no matter what happens. And so we're coming up here with our For the Farmers tour, and CHS Big Sky, a main sponsor of that tour for us. We appreciate all the work that you do. What does it mean to be able to be a part of this For the Farmers tour for you guys?
I can't think of a better place to be today, because we're taking a message out to a broader audience. In our line of work, we get tied up with our customers, and that's how we convey our message, is usually talking back and forth to the crowd we deal with. And to have an event like this, to get it out to a broader audience, what a thing to be a part of. So I'm very happy that we can carry that message and we can move forward and get it out in a fashionable way that everybody can understand where things come from. It's not a shelf we go off and pick the items we need. There are a lot of struggles and a lot of triumphs that come along with that.
Yep, and that's why we're here, is to celebrate the producers that are there day in and day out. And we appreciate all the work you guys do. You're right there with them, helping them find solutions. Again, Eddie Scheiber and Perry Johnston with CHS Big Sky. Thanks, guys. We appreciate you being here.
Hey, don't go away with that yet. Hey, Perry. Yes. What do you do for fun around here?
Pardon me?
What do you do for fun around here?
Oh, my gosh. There are so many things. We were talking about fake turf earlier, and this is the time of year where you never see fake turf versus real turf, Mylon, and the pasture land look the same color. So so what do I do for fun?
Yeah.
Probably need to start walking more, but I do like a lot of yard work, that type of thing. It's very therapeutic for
nice.
Me. So that is what I enjoy doing, and seeing if I can get the matching production that we get our growers when we're out walking in the fields with them, if I can bring that back to my lawn. And I'm not sure I've been successful in that.
Hey, Eddie, what do you think Perry should do for fun?
Get out of the office more.
Yeah. What do you do around here? What's your recreation?
I golf a lot and do a lot of hunting, so that's what I enjoy doing around when I'm not in the office and can get out. So
yeah. Nice. Good. Thank you guys for coming on today. I appreciate it. Let's give them a hand, huh? CHS.
All right. Thank you, Colton. Good job. Colton Young once again with the Northern Ag Network. And sitting next to my right here, Andy Schwab with the Northern Ag Network as well. Andy, it's been a fun morning. And for the farmer's trip, I want you to talk about where we're going and what we're going to see. I want to thank a lot of people here, the Haver distributors, the Watkins distributors as well, the Northern Ag Network, but CHS and Montana State Fund, Stockman Bank, all these people. We've got these T-shirts, the For the Farmers T-shirts, all those sponsors are on the back. Thank you, guys, not only for sponsoring, but for the love that you share with the farmers. So, Andy Schwab, talk about who we're going to see and what we're going to learn today.
Yeah, we're going to be heading off to Greg Wires first here after we get wrapped up here. That's just down the road. And then we'll head over to McCormick's, Todd Hansen's, Caparoods, and wrap things up before we get to the highway bar with the Santa Rivas there in Hingham. And it's just going to be good to kind of just hear their firsthand tale of what this year has been like. And you know, we've seen so many pockets of great crops and some pockets that are having just tough growing conditions. So it's going to be interesting to see what these producers are seeing on the high line.
This is the third year. Courtney Kibblewhite joins us, our vice president for Northern Broadcasting and a big organizer behind this. We've got to give a shout out to Lainey Kitzman as well for doing all this, our intern. Most excellent work. I'm going to give her a hand right now. She's
go
here.
Lainey.
Yeah. She's ignoring us. That's okay. talk about how in this third year, people are recognizing that, yes, our farmers are still the salt of our earth here in Montana.
Well, and I think the cool part about it is how many sponsors have been willing to get on board. And, you know, they realize that if it weren't for the farmers and ranchers, then they wouldn't be in business. Our communities wouldn't be in business. There wouldn't be kids in our schools. And these folks have given money and are taking the day to really celebrate what we have. And it's not, you know, we're focused on the High Line today, but really this is a symbol of what we do throughout Montana. Is we're grateful for the bounty that we've given. And there's so many people that take to get the product to market. So even though we'll be looking at a few fields today, I know a few of them might be harvesting. We'll see how that moisture content looks, but we've got a number of folks that I'd love to mention if we have a second.
Take 30.
Take 30. Okay, yeah. Here we go. Speed. Haver Distributors, CHS Big Sky, Dukeshire Caparoot Insurance, Montana Renewables, Farmers Union Insurance, Montana State Fund, Town and Country Supply Association, Montana State University Extension, Torgerson's Equipment, Pinion, Stockman Bank, Mountain West, Farm Bureau Insurance, Northern Pulse Growers, Sabanier Stillwater, and Stokes Market will be providing lunches for us today. We thank New Media Broadcasters who's broadcasting, as well as EGRA Studios. We've got Riley Slifka in today helping film. So there's a ton of people who care, and you know, 30 plus people in this room who are coming out to say, you know what, this one is for the farmers.
We'll see you at the highway bar at 5 o'clock tonight for the social, and we'll see you on your farm.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.